This is a 3CR podcast produced in the studios of independent community radio station 3CR in Melbourne, Australia. Go to allthews.3cr.org.au.
3CR would like to acknowledge the Kulin Nation, true owners, caretakers and custodians of the land from which we broadcast. 3CR pays respect to elders past and present of the Kulin Nation. We recognise their unceded sovereignty.
This is 3CR Breakfast.
Oh, yeah.
Alternative news, analysis, and current affairs. Monday to Friday, 7 a.m. to 8:30 a.m.
Only double.
Clap your hands.
Good morning, listeners. You're on the Monday Breakfast Show here at 3CR on 8:55 a.m. It's just me, Hannah, in the studio today. Rob is taking a well-needed rest. I think they spent the weekend lifting weights for trans rights, so I'm sure they really need that good sleep in. Today on the show, we're going to be listening back to some speeches from the Trans Day of Vengeance rally. First up, we're going to be hearing from Alice Benson. She's a Greens councillor. And then secondly, we're going to be listening to the second episode of the show produced by LV Swan here in NAM called What Children Know. The second episode of this series is Children Speak Their Truths About Their Love and Care for the Earth. And then third on the show, we're going to listen to another speech from the rally on Saturday, where Damien, who is a member of Pride and Protest in Sydney, speak on sex worker and migrant and trans rights. And then at 8 o'clock, we've got our monthly segment, Tiny Sparks and Turning Points. It's a little early. This usually it's the first Monday of every month, but because next week's a public holiday, we're just slotting it in now. But they'll be bringing us some radical events over the years that changed this country, and this feature is looking at the month of April over our collective history. And then at the end of the show, if we have time, because we've got such an action-packed show today, we'll be listening to a conversation between folks at Asia Pacific Currents and James Crafty, a socialist unionist and anti-Zionist Jew. The trio speak about James's experience in the occupied West Bank, as well as the escalation of Zionist propaganda and settler violence since October 7th, 2023. But yeah, first up, we got headlines, so stay tuned.
Some folks know about it, some don't. Some will learn to shout it, some won't. But sooner or later, baby, here's a ditty. Say you're gonna have to get right down to the real nitty-gritty. Let's get right down to the real nitty-gritty. Now, one, two, nitty-gritty. Now, yeah, boom, nitty-gritty.
In an unprecedented move, the Victorian Labor government under the Premier Jacinta Allen has announced free public transport across the state from March 31st through to the end of April. The $60 million measure will apply to metro trains, trams and the V-Line network as petrol prices surge to around 260 cents per litre for unleaded and over 320 cents for diesel. Driven by escalating global conflict and supply instability, standing alongside Transport Minister Gabriel Williams, Allen framed the policy as relief for households under pressure. Allen said, quote, "I am determined to do everything within my control to help Victorians deal with rising fuel prices," end quote. The government says the move could save regular commuters up to $250 across the month, with daily Mikey caps sitting at $11.40. It has also flagged plans to legislate work from home rights and introduced during the pandemic, positioning both measures as ways to ease congestion and the cost of living strain. The announcement has been welcomed by the Victorian Farmers Federation, which has been warning of the real-time impact of fuel shortages on regional industries. President Brett Hosking said the stakes are especially high outside the city, saying, quote, "For most Victorians, a fuel shortage means cancelled plans, longer queues and a tighter weekly budget." He also said, quote, "For farmers, timing is everything. And if the tank is empty at the wrong moment, you can't wait. You lose the opportunity and sometimes the entire crop," end quote. But while the policy offers short-term relief, critics say it exposes a deeper failure, a transport system that still leaves many working class and regional communities dependent on expensive fossil fuel-driven travel. Free fares for a month won't fix decades of underinvestment in accessible, reliable public transport, nor will it address the privatisation of the market logic that continues to shape essential services. For many, the question remains, why does it take a crisis for basic mobility to become a public good? And what would it look like if it stayed that way? Also in news this week, following last week's historic sea of red that saw 35,000 educators march on Parliament, the Australian Education Union has warned that, quote, "another day like today is not off the table," end quote. If the government does not respond to demands for a 35% pay rise. The strike, the first in 13 years, highlighted a deep-seated anger over Victoria's status as the lowest-funded education state in Australia. The Australian Education Union has rejected the Victorian government's offer of a 17% pay rise, with teachers such as Murrumbeena's primary school teacher L. Avery reporting, quote, "staff felt disrespected by the government's offer," end quote, and described the offer as an insult. AEU Victorian branch President Justin Mullaney remains firm on the demand for a 35% pay rise, stating, quote, "Teachers, education support staff and principals have come out because they are deeply frustrated. They feel completely disrespected by the Allan Labor government and they want an offer that genuinely respects their work," end quote. As the state government points to a dire financial position, with the state debt reaching to 160 billion, rank and file teachers at the picket lines have been clear. This is meant to be the education state. It is not. It is currently the worst education state for those of us on the ground. In Victoria, graduate salaries start at approximately $78,000 compared to $87,000 in New South Wales and over $92,000 in the Northern Territory. Currently, Victorian teachers are Australia's lowest paid. Public schools are the lowest funded. And finally, this Tuesday, March 31st, 3CR Community Radio will once again hand over the airways for its annual Trans Day of Audibility, an 8-hour broadcast led entirely by trans and gender diverse voices. The takeover creates space for community-led storytelling, music and political discussion centering the perspectives of often sidelined in the mainstream media. This year's theme is Joy as Resistance. It comes at a time when public debate has been dominated by legislative and cultural battles over gender-affirming care and so-called religious freedom laws. Our very own Tilda Joy said that the day is about carving out space for community voices to be heard without distortion, saying, quote, "We aren't just here to be seen. We are here to be heard on our own terms. 3CR is one of the few places where trans people can speak without being filtered or gaslit by mainstream media. Joy is powerful in a climate that so often focuses on our existence as a debate. Choosing to center celebration, culture, and connection is a radical act. Listeners can expect a full day of live music from local gender-diverse collectives, alongside deep dives into the history of trans organizing, including its intersections with Victorian's union movement. A station built on grassroots participation, 3CR says the broadcast reflects its ongoing commitment to amplifying voices too often excluded elsewhere. These have been the news headlines for Monday, the 30th of March. You're listening to 3CR on 855 AM.
The Commons Social Change Library is an online collection of educational resources for those involved in community campaigns and social and labour movements. It collects, curates, and distributes key lessons and resources from progressive movements from around Australia and across the globe. The library includes over 1,400 resources covering campaign strategy, community organising, activist history, digital campaigning, justice, equity, diversity, and inclusion, and much, much more. It's free to access the library, so check out the collection at www.commonslibrary.org.
ThreeCR would like to thank our sponsors, Earth Greetings, cards that connect, care, and celebrate. Support wildlife and habitat with every purchase. Inspired by nature, giving back to the planet. Learn more at earthgreetings.com.au.
You're listening to the Monday Breakfast Show here at 3CR on 855 AM. Speaking of trans resistance and the Trans Day of Audibility happening tomorrow here at 3CR, listeners, if you want to come into the station and celebrate queer and trans rights with us, you're more than welcome. It'll be a beautiful day. Speaking of trans resistance, we're going to be listening to a few speeches from the Trans Day of Vengeance rally that happened on Saturday. Some of the speeches, all the speeches were really beautiful and powerful, and I actually teared up at a couple of them. First up, we're going to be listening to a speech from Greens Councillor Alice Benson. Stay tuned.
I also want to start today by acknowledging that we're gathered on stolen Wurundjeri Woiwurrung land to pay my respect to elders past and present and to any First Nations people who are joining us here today. Because there is no queer liberation without First Nations justice. The same systems that dispossess and police First Nations people are the systems that police trans bodies, identities, and resistance today. So what I want to talk about today is not just one issue, but about a pattern that we're all living through. A pattern of increasing control over who gets to exist freely, over who gets to speak, and who gets to access the care that they need to survive. We're seeing trans bodies, trans lives, placed under a microscope, debated in parliaments, scrutinised in media, regulated in healthcare, in sports, in public life. And at the same time, we're seeing people, especially queer and trans people, targeted for speaking out in solidarity with Palestine, alongside growing attacks on the right to protest itself. These are all connected, because when the system is threatened, it doesn't just push back in one place. It tightens control everywhere, over protest, over speech, and over people's bodies. At Mardi Gras, a festival born out of protest, we saw elected board members removed and Pride in Protest banned from marching. Yeah. For standing with the trans community and standing in solidarity and calling out the genocide. This should alarm all of us, because this is how institutions respond when people refuse to stay silent. Through removing those who speak too loudly, who connect struggles, who refuse to separate trans rights from broader questions of justice, and by shutting them out of the very spaces that they helped to build. We're seeing this same logic play out across Australia and globally. With crackdowns on protest and laws expanding police powers. In Queensland and New South Wales, we're even seeing expressions of Palestinian solidarity are being criminalised. And at the very same time, we're seeing trans people's access to healthcare increasingly restricted, delayed, and debated. This is not a coincidence, because both of these things came from the same place. A system that seeks to control who is allowed to resist and who is allowed to exist. When the state limits protest, it's deciding whose voices are acceptable. When the state limits access to gender-affirming care, it decides whose lives are valid. And in both cases, it's about power. It's about maintaining control by narrowing the conditions under which people can live freely and speak freely. So when we say, from the river to the sea, Palestine will be free, we are asserting something fundamental. That people have the right to self-determination, that people have the right to live free from state violence. And that includes the right to protest, to speak, and to access the care you need without being policed or denied. And that brings me to healthcare, because the control that we're talking about isn't abstract. It's built into the systems that people have to navigate every day. My background is as a psychologist, and years ago, I thought that I was doing the right thing by learning how to do WPATH assessments to help my clients access gender-affirming care. But almost immediately, I was struck by the sheer injustice of that model, that I, as a cis person, was placed in a position to decide who was deserving of care. The trans people were subject to hurdle after hurdle to access the same care that cis people access without question. This is a dehumanising system, and it's not about care, it's about control. It's the same logic as restricting protest. Make people justify themselves, make them wait, and make them prove that they are worthy. Put barriers in place that wear people down until fewer people push back, fewer people access what they need, and those systems remain intact. So when we say we need free, accessible, gender-affirming care, we're also saying something deeper. We're saying that we need a system that stops treating trans people as something to be regulated. We need a system that is fair, that doesn't pathologise identity, and that doesn't impose extra hurdles for the same care that's provided to others. Because healthcare should not be a place of control. It should be a place of care, support, and solidarity. And that's why all of this matters. Because whether it's removing activists from marches, banning protest, criminalising solidarity, or restricting healthcare, it's all the same pattern. Control resistance, control bodies, and control who gets to live with dignity. And that brings me to today. Today is our Trans Day of Vengeance, because we are done with a system that says that visibility is enough. Visibility without material change is a lie. We don't need more rainbow logos and corporate floats. We don't need politicians who show up for photos whilst blocking the care that people need to survive. We need power. We need free, accessible, gender-affirming care without gatekeeping and without delay. And if the institutions that were built in our name won't deliver that, if they'd rather ban activists than confront injustice, if they'd rather platform corporations than protect communities, then we will build power outside of them. We will organise and we will disrupt. We will refuse to play along with systems that treat trans lives as negotiable. And I want to be clear, the Greens will always stand for trans justice. We will fight for truly accessible gender-affirming care. We will fight to end discrimination, and we will fight back against every attempt to scapegoat trans people for political gain. We will not stay silent while trans lives are turned into a culture war talking point, whether that's in parliament, in the media, or on the global stage. Because trans rights are human rights, and human rights are non-negotiable. But we know that real change doesn't come just through votes in parliament. It comes from movements. It comes from people who organise, who resist, and refuse to back down. But movements are strengthened by allies, both inside and outside of Parliament, and you will always have that in us. Because trans people deserve more than just visibility. They deserve safety, dignity, and justice. And let's be clear, we're not asking for scraps from a system that was never built for us. We're demanding a society that works for all of us. And if those in power won't deliver it, then we will organise and we will mobilise and we will force them to. Because real change has never come from waiting. It has come from people like us coming together and refusing to back down. And we will not back down. Thank you.
Trans Family is a not-for-profit organization providing a peer support group for loved ones, including parents, siblings, extended family, and friends of a trans and gender diverse person. Trans Family runs discussion groups in person and online. We offer a safe space to share your experiences, ask any questions regarding your situation, and provide peer support. We are especially keen to hear from loved ones in regional and rural Victoria. Donations to Trans Family are tax deductible. For more information, visit transfamily.org.au or look for us on Facebook. Trans Family is a 3CR supporter.
You're listening to the Monday Breakfast Show here at 3CR. Before that little CSA, we heard from Alice Benson from the Trans Day of Vengeance rally on Saturday. Second up on the show, we're going to be listening to the second episode of the podcast, What Children Know, produced by LV Swan here in NAM. The second episode of this series is Children Speak Their Truths About Love and Care for the Earth. They know deeply who they are and how they belong to this. They're inviting for all of us adults is to pay attention and wake up to what is important. Can we slow down and listen? Hear words from these young and wise voices from music camps, drama classes, and living rooms. These kids share their ideas and knowledge.
I'm just a part of everything.
This is What Children Know, a podcast where you'll hear from children talking about visions of peace, being one with the earth, belonging, and the future. Part play, part truth telling, and part dreaming. I'm LV Swan. Thank you for listening.
My brain is thinking, but it's surprisingly not coming out of my mouth.
Part two, the earth and how to love it. In this part, I'll be talking to more children about the earth and things, and also with Lauren. So just a heads up, Lauren isn't a child. He is a full grown man. And a friend of mine. He is talking about his childhood, so hopefully that will suffice. I really like this very short story he tells of him and his mum going to anti-nuclear rallies back when he was a kid.
You know, when I was younger, everywhere I knew, like my whole life, like all my mountains, you know, like the lake and everything, this would all disappear if that concrete tower exploded. Because for me, the power plant was just this huge concrete tower with this white smoke coming out. It was very scary, actually, when I was a kid. Because it was very real. Like, you were like, if this explodes, like, we disappear and the mountains disappear. The demonstration was, like, in front of the power plant. So you'd be, like, having this huge demonstration walking towards that. And the sign was a yellow sun. And this big smile, and it's German to start with, and it says a nuclear no thanks. And so I had that t-shirt, and this t-shirt was like very, very playful, you know, like very childish, because it was a big smiley sun. At the same time, it was kind of joyful because like it was all nice people. And actually, from not to say it, like I was not afraid of dying. I think I was afraid of my mountains disappearing.
Well, I think of the nature as a friend and as family because, well, it helped us, it helped create us. And it just calms me down when I talk to trees and blossoms and stuff because, and if we didn't really have it, we would be living in big buildings and everywhere you look it's the same grey concrete place with a few plastic trees. But with nature you can look anywhere and it's always brand new.
What's one thing that you really love about the Earth?
Sea creatures that can't move, like starfish and sea anemone.
Quite a few of these recordings are taken at a music camp called Rosewood. Yeah, because you can tell.
I reckon trees and plants and stuff, they just seem sort of as real as, like, us, because we're sort of in the same cycle.
Are you the land?
Well, we're part of the land.
We're part of land, but we're not really the land.
Well, we live on the land,
so we're kind
of... Well, we're part of the land, like, mentally, but literally we're not actually part of the land, because that would be weird and then we wouldn't be able to move.
Oh, yeah. I need the crawly creepers, I need the truth speakers, and I'm a human creature, I need the beauty seekers, I need the children as teachers. And it's all blown apart, it's all moving way too, way too, way too fast. Changes within me. So I change something to see if something changes within me. And I'm a human creature. I need the big dreamers. I need fire keepers, I need the web weavers, and I'm a human creature, I need the moon bleeders, I need the sun feeders, I need the cloud readers, and it's all blown apart, it's all moving way too, way too.
This means like being part of, like I'm being part of it, like being part of the whole world, like being one with the world, like just feeling like you belong, and yeah.
I think we should definitely start actually thinking of the Earth as a friend, not just a material. I think anyone really wants to live in a rocket ship for the rest of their life. I don't think that we should be taking risks about... No one actually understands the Earth like our ancestor did. People just think it's a place we live on and it's a place that we should use to our advantage. And I don't think that's the right way, personally, but I'm not trying to criticise anyone.
Thank you so much for listening. You're listening to What Children Know by Elvy Swan. I'd like to say a massive thank you to everyone I spoke to for this project. It's been an absolute pleasure. and especially the people who are included in the podcast. You heard from Cora and Bella, Tilly, Laron, Hannah and Alice, Remy and Toby, and Iggy. And a special thank you to the beautiful musicians that also feature in this podcast. Ruby Lou Band and G Kelly. This podcast was recorded on Wurundjeri country. Sovereignty has never been ceded. And this is Saren, who wrote the next song.
This song is about growing up on stolen land. It's about learning from our history, the drips and drabs of history that we were taught in school, and then the truth that comes out as you search for it and as you listen. Always was, always will be Aboriginal land.
Cut down all the trees for four-legged beasts and little houses all over. They chose what to see, ignore country, tried smother it with clovers. Oh, when the ships came rolling over. Oh, when the ships came rolling over. Attempted removal of cultures, the usual holes in walls and fences raised. The same violence led to the silence the history books gloss over. When the shame came rolling over. Oh, when the shame came rolling over. Our dirty history, less of a mystery, sifting through with a fine-tooth comb. Still colonizing, still none the wiser. How can we call this place home when the birds are flying over? Home when the birds are flying over. What do they see? How can we reverse this travesty? Listen carefully, respectfully. No, none of us are free until we all. Sifting through with a fine-tooth comb. Still colonizing, still none the wiser. How can we call this place home when the ships came rolling over? Home when the shame came rolling over. Home when the truth comes rolling.
That was What Children Know. What a beautiful podcast. It makes me emotional here at the studio. To listen to the whole series of that podcast series, you can search for What Children Know wherever you get your podcasts. Hopefully we'll be able to play all the episodes from that beautiful series by LV here on the Monday Breakfast Show, but otherwise, yeah, go to What Children Know. Next up, we're going to be listening to another speech from Saturday's Trans Day of Vengeance rally, We'll be hearing from Damien, who is a member of Pride in Protest in Sydney, and they speak on sex worker, migrant, and trans rights. Stay tuned.
Hello, everybody. My name is Damien. I am a member of Pride in Protest. I'm very happy to have to be invited to speak here today. So thank you, everyone, very much for having me. As always, I would like to start my speech with a chant. Add the bars into the street! Out of the closet and into the street! Together we stand, together we fight! We demand our equal rights! Alright, thank you very much, everybody. Now I want to say that we are here gathering in numbers amidst a crisis with a rise in racism and transphobia across this country, with racist bigots recently taking over the streets, holding hands with the Zionist lobby and TERF, who are fighting for the religious right to discriminate against every single member of our community. We are gathering because we are seeing both across the world and right here, our community being attacked on every front. And so when trans rights are under attack, what do we do? When migrants are under attack, what do we do? When black rights are under attack, what do we do? What we are seeing is a disgusting anti-trans attack globally, in the US, in the UK, all across the world, with puberty blocker have been halted in Queensland, and been halted in many, many other states, spreading to the Northern Territory, and most recently in Tasmania. What we have seen is an ongoing discrimination with the Labour government, who, by the way, prior to their election, ran and paraded down the street saying that they will protect our community, say that they will provide anti-discrimination protection for our community, but most recently have decided to capitulate to the religious right and said that they will not do so unless the Liberals agree. Yay! It is this same Labour government that is fighting for an ongoing war that is supporting of a racist and transphobic Trump government in the US. Now for my speech today, I want to mention a very important story which happened last year. It was in March last year, which is around this time, that one of our friends, that I got a call from Villawood Immigration Detention in New South Wales, from a transgender woman named Sonia. Sonia was placed in the special section in which only transgender people or the people who the state deem as very, very dangerous were placed in. And so you might ask, what is her crime? She was traveling from a Southeast Asian country and was racially profiled and flagged at the border. As she was about to tap on her visa, border immigration pulled her aside for seeing that her gender marker does not match with what she looks like, in which border officer forced her to hand over her phone and search through her entire luggage. They did a phone forensic search of her entire phone and saw deleted text messages, email, and found an expired sex work ad that is not even from Sydney, a place in which she went to. They then held her in immigration detention in coercive questioning at the airport for 12 hours in a room with no windows. During this time, different border officers, the majority of which are men, took turns during their shift questioning her about whether or not she planned on doing sex work in this country. They then told her that she had two options. If she admitted that she planned to work in this country, they will deport her, place her in immigration detention and deport her. And if they do not do so, they will do that anyway. And then they decided to read out explicit text messages between her and her partner in front of her. She then was asked to sign a document with her dead name and the wrong gender marker, in which the border officer decided to describe her as a man. the ABF forced her to sign that document, and rightfully she decided not to. But regardless, they placed her in immigration detention anyway. It is in immigration detention with only her phone, with no Australian SIM, and no access to gender-affirming care, to any of her standard procedure required for any other detainee that she contacted us. She was shortly deported very quickly. Sonia is the story of a multitude of migrant transgender women in this country, of a multitude of migrants visa holder in this country. She had been placed in immigration detention, awaiting deportation and visa outcome, just to then be immediately deported without any contact from the world. The detention system in Australia recently has been contracted and run by the US company MTC, as contracted by the Labor government, who awarded its contracts. For anyone who wonder what MTC is, MTC also run a multitude of privatized prisons in this country that is responsible for the mass black deaths in custody that we are seeing at the moment. Yeah. MTC is also one of the privatized prisons that is in the US that perform conversion therapy on transgender people all across the United States. Yeah. With an election coming up in this state, and polling across the state, seeing a massive wave for One Nation, I think it is clear to each and every single one of us here that we have no option but to fight back against this ongoing attack. It is an attack on each and every single one of us. It is an attack to say whether we live or die. We have no option as migrant community, as trans community, as the queer community, to rise up and fight. We have to remember that we are standing here on Trans Day of Visibility, but in just a few months, in November 23rd, that is Trans Day of Resistance. And you know what happened on Trans Day of Resistance? It is just 1 week before the election in the state. Now it is up to us to say what the agenda of the people here want. And I think I speak for the majority of the people here when we say that we want an end to the oppression of the people in this country. We want an end to the ongoing war, and we want an end to the policing of our community. Out of the bars into the street! Out of the closet and into the street! Together we stand, together we fight! We demand our equal rights!
We demand our equal rights!
All right, I have one last thing. Now this Tuesday, you might have seen some of these flyers handing around. If you have yet to, maybe it'll be good to get one or some for the community. There's be people handing them out. There's a vigil and speak out for our sister Yuko. Yuko is an Asian migrant worker who was murdered and killed by a client, well, by a mug at her work. After her passing, there has been court case and court case and court case around her murder that is targeted at her murderer. This Tuesday at 10 a.m., there will be a hearing. There will be a hearing for her murderer and killer, or alleged murderer and killer. Here, the Melbourne magistrates will decide whether or not all charges against him will be dropped, or that it will go to a long trial that begins next year. We are here 18 months after her murder, and the community, the migrant community, the sex worker community, have gathered every single hearing in front of the court to say that inside that court, no justice will be found. And that the only way to honor the one that we passed away is to actually honor the victims, not just focusing the story on forensic reports and the murderer. And so it is really important. And believe me, I would never invite you to something at 9 a.m. in the morning if it wasn't important, that we all gather there wearing red, Yuko's favorite color, we are demanding the following thing: the end to the silencing of survivor and the creation of community-based system of justice. The end of border policing, visa crackdown, ongoing raids in our home, our workplaces, and our community. And the full decriminalization and the end to the policing of all form of sex work. And so I ask today there will be many sex workers who march with you, and that same solidarity is shown through the campaign to fight for the rights of street work, to the campaign to fight for the rights of migrant worker, that you show up at 9 a.m. on Tuesday and say that we gather for Yuko, and we gather for all our sister who never came home, who have lost us way too soon.
3CR, your station, your voice.
Then join Sally on Sundays at noon for Out of the Pan.
Welcome to Rainbows Don't Fade with Age on Radio 3CR.
Welcome to Trans Creator Radio.
Where histories, queer futures, is an audio journey into the
Trans Day of Audibility, a day for us to be heard and not seen.
3CR, your station, your voice.
Do you work in a brothel, massage shop, escort agency, fetish house or dungeon, cam studio or porn set, sauna, short-time hotel, outdoors or on the street, or in any other space where sex work happens? Recent changes to Victorian sex work laws mean that sex workers now have more options for how and where we can work and who we can work with.
To find out more about Victoria's new sex work laws, contact Vixen, Victoria's statewide peer-only sex work organisation, 100% by and for all sex workers, on 039-070-9050.
And talk to another sex worker about what the partial decriminalisation of sex work means for you, your workplace and your community. Or check out the Decrim Info Hub at vixen.org.au. Vixen is a 3CR supporter.
You're listening to the Monday Breakfast Show here at 3CR on 855 AM. Before those CSAs, we were listening to Damien's speech from Saturday's Trans Day of Vengeance rally. A reminder, the vigil for Yuko is on tomorrow on Tuesday at Melbourne Magistrates Court at 9 AM. To support Rising Red Lantern, go to givenow.com.au/rising-red-lantern.
Time.
3CR, always bringing you the latest union news.
They're coming after us at the moment. They want to get rid of penalty rates, the big push from businesses. They want to get rid of all the things that you and I have fought for.
So there's tens of thousands of jobs gone, contracted out to sham contracting arrangements.
On 8.55 a.m. and on the web, 3cr.org.au.
3CR is about community, and we welcome your participation at the station.
3CR is open to a wide diversity of volunteers and is a great way to connect with Melbourne's activist community. Have you ever thought about volunteering, doing a reception shift, getting a program on air,
training in radio skills, or contributing to one of the station's committees?
There are many ways to be involved at 3CR. To find out more, go to 3cr.org.au and get in touch.
What's taking place in Palestine is horrendous.
Here are some ways that you can keep yourself informed and involved.
Listen in to Palestine Remembered every Saturday morning at 9:30 a.m. or listen to the podcast.
Join the APAN mailing list at apan.org.au for updates, news about actions you can get involved in, and where you can donate to provide humanitarian assistance.
Listen to other news and current affairs programs on 3CR that also cover Palestine.
The oppression of the Palestinian people has been going on for 75 years. It has to stop. You can be part of making that happen by staying informed and active.
APAN is a proud supporter of 3CR.
You're listening to the Monday Breakfast Show here at 3CR. We just heard Country Living by Daisy Picker. And last night, I went to go see the Pogues with my mum and my partner and my friend, and it was lovely. So I thought, why don't we listen to a little Pogue song as we roll into 8 a.m.?
quietly laughing. And a robin, a robin, a robin I'll go. A robin, a robin, a robin I'll go. And a robin, a robin, a robin I'll go. For a pair of brown eyes. For a pair of brown eyes. And a robin, a robin, a robin I'll go. And a robin, a robin, a robin.
That was A Pair of Brown Eyes by The Pogues. My mum reminded me last night that she played that song with me on guitar when I was little, because I've got brown eyes. Very, very cute stuff. And that brings us to our monthly segment, Tiny Sparks and Turning Points, a bulletin from our good friends at the Commons Social Change Library. Today they'll bring us some radical events over the years that changed this country. This feature is looking at the month of April over our collective history and will come to listeners on the first Monday of every month, apart from today. Due to the public holiday next week, we'll be playing this segment a week early at 8 a.m. For now, a big thank you for our friends at the Commons Social Change Library. You can find their work at commonslibrary.org and look for their page on the 3CR website, which will feature if you want to listen back, which is coming soon.
Tiny Sparks and Turning Points is a monthly selection of protests, strikes, and significant dates concerning social change in Australian history. This segment is presented by the Commons Social Change Library, a repository of more than 1,500 resources for campaigners, which can be found at commonslibrary.org.
On the 1st of April 1981, members of the Low Income Housing Action Group set up a tent embassy in Adelaide's Victoria Square.
On the 3rd of April 1922, water unions marched through Ballarat to celebrate the 8-hour day and express working class pride and power. The procession was followed by a sports gala and carnival, whose events included bicycle races, wood chopping, and dance competitions featuring the Sailor's Hornpipe, Irish Jig and Highland Fling.
On the 4th of April 1982, Palm Sunday rallies of around 40,000 people took place in Sydney and Melbourne. These called for peace and a nuclear-free Australia. During the same week, 5,000 people marched in Brisbane, while numerous other protests were held across Australia.
On the 5th of April 1864, 300 workers and supporters from South Australia's Moonta and Wallaroo mines held a meeting at the top of Bald Hill, situated at the halfway point between the two towns. This was a key show of strength during one of the biggest strikes the state's Copper Triangle had seen. Miners were paid on a piece rate basis, lived in substandard housing, and engaged in dangerous work. Over a 10-week period, further trades joined the strike, but it would take until June the 10th for their employers to finally relent, granting the workers all their demands.
On the 6th of April 1943, 1,500 women in the munitions industry struck in Melbourne, demanding equal pay with men.
On the 8th of April 1972, construction workers building the Sydney Opera House prevented the sacking of a unionist and turfed out management to run their own workplace for 6 weeks, introducing the 35-hour week in the process.
Early in the morning on the 8th of April 1998, balaclava-wearing security guards with dogs were sent into ports operated by employer Patrick Stevedores around Australia to lock out more than 1,500 members of the Maritime Union of Australia. Thus began the war on the waterfront. The wholesale sacking of the workforce soon backfired as tens of thousands of people around the country joined picket lines and rallies. With mass picketing continuing around Australia, the dismissal of the workers was eventually ruled by the courts to be illegal.
On the 9th of April, 1990, a flotilla of 55 activists blockaded a ship carrying unsustainably logged rainforest timber from Southeast Asia as it attempted to travel up the Yarra River.
On the 9th of April 2006, hundreds of Sydneysiders took part in the city's latest Reclaim the Streets protestival. The gathering drew attention to the desperate need for increased investment in public transport and cycle paths rather than expensive and polluting road expansion.
On the 10th of April 1997, 150 workers occupied the public gallery of Western Australia's State Parliament to protest against the passage of anti-union laws.
On the 11th of April 1951, women metal workers in Brisbane began a three-month strike against attempts by the Ream Manufacturing Company to cut their wages from 90% to 75% of those paid to men.
On the 11th of April 1994, a group of squatters barricaded themselves into a previously abandoned West End Housing Commission property in Brisbane to prevent an eviction and ensure the home continued to be used for shelter.
On the 12th of April 1986, protesters opposed to the racist regime in South Africa picketed the Coles supermarket at the corner of King and George Streets in Sydney. The company's defiance of an international trade boycott against apartheid by selling and promoting South African goods was highlighted by protesters inside and outside the store.
On the 12th of April 1993, 4 days of protest calling for the closure of the US Narunga military base in South Australia came to an end.
On the 15th of April 1984, 250,000 people marched in Sydney for peace and nuclear disarmament.
On the 17th of April 2012, disabled people rallied outside Victorian Parliament to demand accessible transport for all Victorians.
On the 17th of April 1876, six Irish Republicans exiled in Fremantle as convicts escaped the colony in the US merchant ship, the Catalpa.
On the 18th of April 2005, hundreds converged on South Australia's Baxter Detention Centre as part of Easter protests against the mandatory detention of refugees.
On the 18th of April 1971, the Fairley Five were released from prison in Melbourne after serving 11 days. Joan Coxedge, Jean McLean, Chris Cathy, Joe McLean Cross and Irene Miller had all been found guilty of willful trespass after they gave out leaflets concerning conscientious objection to young men who were registering for conscription. While serving their sentences, these members of Save Our Sons were supported by regular vigils and protests outside Fairley Prison.
On the 18th of April 1981, federal cuts to funding for women's shelters were opposed by a rally of 200 people in Melbourne's Bourke Street Mall. Throughout the year, further action in support for survivors of domestic violence saw protests around Australia. These included occupations of government offices, as well as King's Hall in Federal Parliament. Disused properties in Sydney and Adelaide were also squatted for use as refuges.
On the 20th of April 1931, 75 teenage caddies at Seton Golf Links in Adelaide went on strike over attempts to lower their wages.
On the 21st of April 1856, Melbourne stonemasons accelerated their campaign for all involved in their trade to enjoy, quote, 8 hours labour, 8 hours rest and 8 hours recreation. With the contractor for Parliament House holding up negotiations, unionists called a stop work at the site where Melbourne University was being built. Marching around the city, the workers shut down various workplaces as part of an indefinite strike. Employer resistance immediately collapsed. The norm for stonemasons in Victoria soon became a working day beginning at 7 a.m. and finishing at 5 p.m. with 2 hours for meals.
Following a concerted campaign and the placement of union bands, the Victorian government backed down on the 21st of April 2013 from plans to redevelop open space in public housing estates in Richmond and Fitzroy.
As part of more than 600 rallies held around the world, Melburnians took part in a March for Science on the 22nd of April 2017. Held on Earth Day, these rallies focused on four key goals: science literacy, open communication, informed public policy, and stable investment in science and research.
Despite acting as sovereign people on their own lands, Tullamarine and other Aboriginal men were charged on the 25th of April 1838 with sheep theft and imprisoned in the Port Phillip Watch House. Before the night was through, the men started a fire by poking long reeds of grass through the prison window into a torch hanging in the jailer's room. Panicking, the guards freed their captives before going off to get help. By the time they returned, both the prison and the prisoners were gone.
On the 26th of April 2006, cleaners marched through Perth and protested outside firms who had refused to improve working conditions.
On the 27th of April 1981, Christine Brohl became the first woman rail shunter in New South Wales. This followed a long campaign against gender exclusion in the trade.
On the 29th of April 1970, First Nations people gathered in Sydney for a day of mourning. This event was one of a number of national protests against official celebrations marking the 200th anniversary of Captain Cook and the Endeavour's arrival in Australia. Members of First Nations communities from across Australia rallied at Sydney Town Hall on the evening prior and held a silent vigil in the city's centre. While the Queen and various dignitaries took part in a televised reenactment on the 29th, First Nations community members marched in a funeral procession from Hyde Park to La Perouse. Many carried signs bearing the names of the nations and communities they hailed from. They then laid wreaths on the beach before turning their backs on the royal yacht.
On the 30th of April 1981, international delegates attending the World Council of Indigenous Peoples joined an Aboriginal land rights march from central Canberra to Parliament House. Once there, members of First Nations communities from across the Pacific, Canada and Central and South America delivered speeches in solidarity.
On the 30th of April 2010, protesters opposed to plans to build a nuclear dump in the Northern Territory rallied outside then Mining Minister, later to be Mining Company lobbyist, Martin Ferguson's office in Thornbury, Melbourne. This was one of many actions held to support the Makati community's opposition to the poisoning of their land. In 2014, the campaign achieved success and prevented the project from going ahead.
You've been listening to Tiny Sparks and Turning Points. The segment will return next month. In the meantime, to find out more about the history of social change in Australia, you can visit commonslibrary.org.
The Commons Social Change Library is an online collection of educational resources for those involved in community campaigns and social and labour movements. It collects, curates, and distributes key lessons and resources from progressive movements from around Australia and across the globe. The library includes over 1,400 resources covering campaign strategy, community organising, activist history, digital campaigning, justice, equity, diversity and inclusion, and much, much more. It's free to access the library, so check out the collection at www.commonslibrary.org.
Trans Day of Audibility returns to 3CR for its fifth year running. 8 hours of wall-to-wall transgender programming, featuring live music, lived experiences and dispatches from the front line in the war against reaction. Tune in from 10 a.m. to 6 p.m. on Tuesday, the 31st of March. 3CR Community Radio, 855 AM, 3cr.org.au, 3CR Digital.
You're listening to the Monday Breakfast Show here at 3CR. We just heard Tiny Sparks and Turning Points from Common Social Change Library, and it was their monthly segment looking at the month of April on our collective history. Tune in next month. For the first Monday of every month, we will be playing May. Okay, that brings us to the last segment of the show. Now we will be listening to a conversation between the folks at Asia Pacific Currents and James Crafty, a socialist, unionist, and anti-Zionist Jew. The trio speak about James's experience in the occupied West Bank, as well as the escalation of Zionist propaganda and settler violence since October 7th, 2023. Stay tuned.
So, firstly, I guess, tell us what took you over to Israel and Palestine, and give us a bit of background to your trip.
Oh, so I decided to go over there, having not been over there for 20 years. My cousin came to Australia, and he'd been involved in some work defending some Palestinian shepherds against regular settler attacks, and he encouraged me to try and go over there again. And I was worried because last time I was over in Palestine, I was arrested, and so I was worried I wouldn't get in. But thankfully, I was able to get in and be able to see what was happening on the ground.
That is a really interesting dynamic, that you were arrested previously, but given the heightened awareness and absolute suppression and oppression of dissenting voices in relation to Israel's genocide of Palestine, how, I guess, what was it like being in that part of the world as a Jewish person, and were you able, I guess, to express any of those dissenting views?
It was certainly able within individuals and so on to be able to express dissenting views. I mean, the whole, I guess, broad aura of the place felt incredibly fascist, and much more fascist than I felt 20 years ago, in the sense of what you were allowed to speak about, in terms of just seeing stickers for nothing but October 7 everywhere. There was about as many October 7 stickers around as we'd see sort of activist stickers here, but not about any issue, certainly not the plight of the Palestinians. Israeli flags absolutely everywhere across Israel and the West Bank, but no sign of Palestinian flags. Obviously, Palestinian flags are illegal in Jerusalem and in broader Israel, so those things were not allowed. But even in the West Bank, just Israeli flags everywhere, draped out by settlers with settler posters and so forth. So the whole place had a very oppressive atmosphere, and so it was very hard to sort of communicate a lot of things, except when particular things were happening, or you knew you were amongst friends.
And is that a development? Is that something new, that kind of theocratic ethno-nationalism, that increased kind of national identity? Do you think that is a increased development from 7th of October 2023, or that's just always how it is over there?
Oh, look, I think it's certainly increased. I think certainly the one thing that put it at bay last time I was there, there was more signs of Palestinian resistance. And so last time I was there, there had just been the Palestinian election. There was a sense you could go to places like Ramallah, Nablus, you would see signs of Palestinian nationalism everywhere as well. And you would see signs of vibrant discussions, and there would be regular rallies and so forth, whereas this time there wasn't that. It was just the Israeli nationalism, and very much centered around the we can take everything we want. And you know, certainly you'd go to the center of Jerusalem and you'd see banners which would say things like, you know, make Gaza Jewish again and so forth, just proudly displayed, and you knew that the alternative could never be even sort of into that. And so it felt a lot stronger. Certainly some things have changed since particularly October 7, 23. such as there's now settler soldier units. So the settler movement has been armed by Israel to run their own soldier units, and that has certainly given them a lot more power, particularly in the West Bank.
So moving towards that, could you talk a little bit about your activities while you were there in the West Bank, what you saw, what type of activities you were in working with Palestinian communities?
Sure. So the West Bank itself is divided into three areas, Area A, B and C. Area C, which is 65% of the West Bank, is both controlled by Israeli security and under Israeli administration, which means that Palestinians can't build there without building permits, which they almost never get. So they're often forced to build illegally or, you know, just to be able to preserve their housing. Meanwhile, settlers continue to build around Palestinian farms, and those farms are subject to regular attacks, disruption, and just frustration by the settlers, which basically happens under the eyes of the Israeli military, sometimes even actively supported by the Israeli military, to harass Palestinians out of those areas into much tighter Bantustans of Area A and B.
And could you talk a little bit about what you saw when you were involved in those activities?
Sure. So I saw a lot of different attempts to harass Palestinians. One of the common things was that the settler movement would try and bring their agricultural their cattle, their sheep, their lambs onto Palestinians' property to eat all of the grain, to make things as difficult as possible on the farms, and actually just move them amongst the Palestinians' sheep to then justify stealing the Palestinians' sheep to say, oh, well, we don't know, all of those sheep are ours. Sometimes there was more extreme and direct violent things. So I experienced and saw arson attacks in the middle of the night of Palestinian homes. And then even just day-to-day sort of violence, hitting of elderly Palestinian men over the head with sticks and that sort of thing.
It's pretty horrific what you've described. I want to just kind of pivot slightly away, but we will come back to the settler movement and settler violence against Palestinians. I want to talk about the Orthodox Jews, because at this point in time, there's government policy that Orthodox Jews don't need to be conscripted into military service, which is growing as a source of tension in Israel, particularly with Israel's objectives in southern Lebanon and Iran. I think the recent reports say that Israel's military is about 15,000 troops short of their objectives of kind of domination across the Middle East. Tell me a little bit about what you observed or what you understood about Orthodox Jews in Israel at this point in time, but also some of the ways of kind of recruiting them into some of these militia, settler militia activities.
Yeah, so I guess there's different levels and different types of orthodoxy amongst the sort of the Israeli Jews. And so it's not sort of one size fits all. Some of them are being recruited to these sort of settler armies and are actively involved in those sorts of movements. But part of the compromise of the setting up of the State of Israel was around this idea that there would be facilitation of Orthodox religious practice, to the point that Orthodox people are not only not required to serve in the army, but quite often not required to work either. And that sort of started off quite small, but you've got a situation where Orthodox families routinely have 10 kids or more, and that's sort of growing. And so the Orthodox are swelling. You know, we used to talk, I think, 10, 20 years ago about this time bomb, where the Palestinian population, which had half of whom were forced out in 48 and 67 and so forth, that that population, even in Israel and the occupied territories, would overtake the Jewish population. But what we're seeing actually is that the Orthodox are having more and more kids. And so that's becoming increasingly economically unstable for Israel itself. And those Israeli families are refusing to serve, they're refusing to work, and so they're constantly a sort of drain on the more liberal Zionist economy, and that's creating a real tension between them and Israel itself.
Could you talk a little bit about, continuing with that community, how they are recruited into the violent settler movement, in particular how the levels of unemployment and sort of delinquent behaviour that it comes with that is leading to them to being recruited?
Sure. So last time I was there, you saw these white fundamentalist Zionist settlements, particularly in places like Hebron, etc. A lot of those were families who were recruited from places like the United States, Australia, and so forth. And they were horrific, and they would frequently beat into Palestinians. More and more, what we're seeing is people recruited from homelessness, out of jails, that you have these rabbis in Israel who are recruiting more and more disenfranchised young Israeli men to become settlers and to harass Palestinians in this very sort of youth-based fascist-type movement, as well as like social media people and so forth who are being basically become pop stars, walking around the West Bank with cap sprays, spraying Israeli and Palestinian leftists who are defending these sort of Palestinian farmlands. So this fascist movement sort of developing amongst this sort of very hard right group in the West Bank.
James, we are unfortunately coming to the end of our time together, but I did want listeners to know that a number of organisations have invited you to speak, and there'll be a lot more opportunity to actually get a pretty detailed and thorough report back from you of what you saw and what that visit was like. Do you want to share with listeners the two upcoming events?
Sure. So there's one with Anti-Zionism Australia tomorrow night, Sunday 29th of March, at the Coburg Library at 6 p.m. And then on Tuesday, there's another one with ASU for Palestine at the MUA Hall in West Melbourne at 6 p.m.
Excellent. And is there a contact number if people wanted to get in touch with you? I mean, you don't have to give that out on air, but in case there was.
To get in touch with the AZA event, and people can then get from there to me pretty easy, it's just AZA at antizionismaustralia.org, and if people email them, I'm more than happy for my details to be passed on through there.
Wonderful, amazing. So those details again is tomorrow night, 6 p.m. at Coburg Library for the Anti-Zionist Australia speaking event, where James Crafty is going to give a more thorough report back on his visit to Palestine, Israel. And then Tuesday evening, ASU for Palestine in the MUA meeting halls. I'm sorry, I missed the time for that. Was that 6 o'clock as well?
That was 6 o'clock as well, thanks.
Excellent. James, thank you so much for your time on the show today. Was there anything you wanted to add?
Oh, look, there's lots, I think, that could be added. But I think the main thing is just the decay into fascism. I mean, they're now talking about making it easy to introduce the death penalty in Palestine, and that any terrorists, and we know from them terrorists can just mean Palestinian stone throwers, can be executed, and can be executed, they must be executed within 90 days. So this is just another escalation in Israel's sort of fascist tendency. So all of these sort of scary updates continue to happen, and we need to be on top of them and continue to get out on the streets.
Absolutely. Thank you so much for your time on the show today.
That was Giselle Hanna speaking with James Crafty, an anti-Zionist Jew who recently returned from the occupied West Bank about their experiences there. As they mentioned in the interview, folks can attend the ASU for Palestine's next meeting this Tuesday at 6 p.m. in the halls of the MUA's office. You can listen to more of the team at Asia Pacific Currents on Saturday mornings from 9 to 9:30 a.m. or at 3cr.org.au/AsiaPac. That brings us to the end of the show. A reminder for the gathering for UCO, the vigil for UCO is on tomorrow, Tuesday, at Melbourne Magistrates Courts at 9 a.m. And tomorrow as well, it's the annual day of Joanne's Day of Audibility, an 8-hour broadcast from 10 a.m. to 6 p.m., led entirely by trans and gender diverse voices. Before that last segment, we heard the monthly segment of Tiny Sparks and Turning Points, a bulletin from our good friends at the Social Change Library, where they told us some radical events over the histories of so-called Australia over the month of April. And before that, we heard a speech from Damien, a member of Pride in Protest, at the Trans Day of Vengeance rally on Saturday. And then before that, we heard the second episode of What Children Know, the podcast produced by Elvi Swan here in NAM. To listen to the whole of that show, search for What Children Know wherever you get your podcasts. And we started off the show with a speech from Alice Benson, a Greens councillor, at Saturday's Trans Day of Vengeance rally. I hope everyone has a lovely Monday and stay tuned for Women on the Line.
You've been listening to a 3CR podcast produced in the studios of independent community radio station 3CR in Melbourne, Australia. For more information, go to allthews.3cr.org.au.